Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Fancy Scientist podcast. Today, I actually interview another podcaster. When I first heard the Forces for Nature podcast, I was in love, and I knew I had to interview Crystal. Crystal DiVincelli is the founder and the creator of the podcast. She's also the host, and I just feel this very similar vibe that Crystal and I have, where we both are deeply interested in conservation and wildlife issues, but we also believe that optimism is the way to go. In Forces for Nature, she takes important topics and discusses them with experts, but she leaves people with action tips. This is so important because then we are able to not only feel inspired, but empowered. And then this creates action and change. And so often in the conservation world, it's easy to go down the doom and gloom route. I get it. I totally understand that there's so many negative things happening to our world. But in order to make change, it's really important that we stay positive and optimistic. So I talked to Crystal today about her podcast, Forces for Nature, about her path to becoming an environmental educator and hosting her own podcast. And then what she's doing now to tackle climate change, which is a huge issue that we're all facing. If you are interested in environmental education, this episode is definitely for you. But either way, you are going to be inspired by Crystal and her journey. Check it out.
Welcome to the Fancy Scientist podcast. I'm Dr. Stephanie Manka, formerly Shuttler, a wildlife biologist who's traveled the world getting their hands dirty, but was given the nickname the Fancy Scientist because I love to dress up and be fancy. My goal is to connect people with nature so that we can restore our planet and rediscover who we really are. I share with you my insights as a scientist and offer real talk on animals, conservation, lifestyle, and advice on this amazing but confusing career. Join me to learn about our world and how we can become the best versions of ourselves so that we can thrive and more effectively conserve nature for all living beings. Hi, Crystal. Welcome to the Fancy Scientist podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Stephanie, for inviting me.
I found you through your podcast, Forces for Nature. Can you tell us what inspired you to create this podcast and what the podcast is all about?
So the podcast came about because I had moved to Colombia with my husband in 2018 for his work. But in that move, I no longer had a work permit to continue doing what I was doing. So prior to that, we were living in Panama and I was working in environmental education. And prior to that, wildlife conservation. And I still wanted to stay working somehow in the field. But this was before COVID and people weren't working online like they do now. And so I didn't know exactly what I could do while we were in Colombia to stay, came up with Forces for Nature because the format of it is interviewing. And so through the podcast, I've been able to reach out to wildlife sustainability, conservation heroes throughout the world and chat with them and stay on top of what's going on out there. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own from what I originally was just thinking it would be a way for me to stay connected is now growing and has become just such a passion project of mine. It's been 3 years now.
That's awesome. Yeah, we started our podcast at around the same time, I noticed.
Nope. February 2020 is when my first episode came out, and that was before the whole world shut down. And it ended up being perfect timing because March 2020, my husband and I went to Costa Rica to visit his family. And that's where like the world shut down. We got stuck in Costa Rica. I had my equipment with me, so I was actually able to continue working on the podcast, but I wouldn't have been able to continue working had anything, you know, if I was in a regular job. So it worked out really well in that regard. I mean,
why did you choose a podcast? Is that because it lended itself the most for interviewing as opposed to like doing a YouTube channel or a blog or something else?
I really loved the idea of doing vlogs, like doing the videos, but none of this is in my background. So I didn't know how to do any of it. And video just seemed like that one extra step that I didn't know how to take. And blogs are interesting, but I really loved the audio component. I was listening to podcasts myself, and so I was inspired by who I was already listening to. So I kind of fell between the blog and the video to the podcast as the, well, compared to a video, it was the path of least resistance. Well, it was still quite a heavy lift to learn how to do all the things with the show.
Yeah. And the thing I love about podcasting is that while I do love writing, you can just explain so much more in a podcast that, you know, you really do have your true voice and you can go on and on telling stories. Yeah. I'm a TikToker, so my podcast can go long sometimes.
And I really love meeting these individuals and like being able to, I mean, we're seeing each other here on the screen. And unfortunately, the audience doesn't necessarily get that. Well, maybe for your show.
These on YouTube too.
Yeah, I need to start doing that. But I love being able to like look at the person and just have that connection with them.
Tell us, like, what kind of episodes do you have? Like, what kinds of guests do you look for? What kind of things do you talk about?
The format of my show is to focus on success stories, environmental and animal success stories. With every episode, we introduce an issue, but we try not to like focus too much on the issue. We touch upon it, we give an overview of what's going on, and then we quickly pivot to what the guest has done to help mitigate that issue and their journey in that. And then by the end of the episode, we aim to leave the listener with action tips on how they can help from wherever they are to answer their question, what could I possibly do regarding deforestation or climate change or investing my funds, if I wanted to get more specific in the kind of episodes mm-hmm. I've had.
Yeah, I love that your podcast is so optimistic. Can I ask what inspired you to go that route, or how did you know to go that route? Because with so much environmental stuff out there, it seems to be very factual, and which can be depressing, of course, because we're losing a lot of biodiversity. There's a lot of problems in the world. So how did you decide to take this optimistic outlook?
That's a really good question. So that I think many conservationists fall into, maybe not so much anymore, but more so in the past, was that we used guilt and shame and facts to try to get people to change. And I was very much guilty of all of that. But when I was in Panama, I worked for the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute down there, and I was working for their Nature Center doing educational programming for them. And one of the things I was tasked with, I don't even remember what yet, maybe 2016 or 17, Smithsonian in DC, they had this new initiative called Earth Optimism. And it was the brainchild of Dr. Nancy Knowlton. And Nancy Knowlton is this renowned marine biologist who, in her own words, got tired of always writing the ocean's obituary. And so what she started doing in her classes, when she spoke at events, in her social media, she started talking about the success stories happening for the ocean. And she started realizing like people were very much connecting with that. People were coming up to her at the end of conferences, thanking her for not focusing only on the doom and gloom. And the Smithsonian was inspired by that and created this entire global event around optimism for the Earth. And so I was charged with bringing the event to Panama. And this was the first time I really started thinking like, oh, optimism, okay, like these success stories. And I started noticing how it also changed how I felt inside, even though I was already like gung-ho a conservationist and wanted to save the world and protect wildlife and all of that. It just made me feel better. Like this kind of work can get really heavy. And sometimes you just want to curl up in a corner. But when you start noticing also the good things that are happening, you feel more energized to go out there and do more work. And so with that, That was the inspiration for the show being focused on successes and good news stories.
I actually did a podcast episode around that topic that people want to follow people like on social media or just listen to people who are more energetic and optimistic and inspirational. And I totally understand it's so easy to get down in this field, but to really be effective, like optimistic is the way to go. And we all are ultimately optimistic because we're in this field. If we weren't, we wouldn't be a part of it. So I think everyone deep down inside is optimistic that there can be change.
Yes, totally.
Okay. What has been your favorite episode that you've done so far?
Oh my gosh, that's an impossible question to ask because I think after every episode that I record, I'm like, that is my favorite.
Or do you have one that stands out? Maybe it's not your favorite. There's too many to choose from, but just one you really liked.
So there was one, this was kind of towards the beginning, but I interviewed a 10-year-old, Brian Hickman, and he had started his own recycling company when he was 3, obviously with the support of his parents.
But I was just like talking and learning how to go to the bathroom.
I know.
Toilet. I mean,
when I interviewed him at 10 years old, he was close to recycling a million cans and bottles. Like he had achieved so much in his tiny little lifespan. And I just, oh my gosh, I wanted to hug him the entire time we were talking. He was the cutest, sweetest thing and so inspirational. And another episode that I really enjoyed, well, I really enjoy them all, but another one was last year. I interviewed Carlton Ward, and he is a National Geographic photographer. But because of his, because of his work, he has documented the Florida panther. And because of his work, he has been able to get all of this legislation passed, helping to conserve huge tracts of land in Florida, bringing together not only the conservationists, but also the cattle ranchers and the government and all these stakeholders that you wouldn't necessarily think would want to work together. And because of the pictures he's taken, the stories he's told, it was just so inspiring. And my parents have a home in Florida, and every time I go, I feel very discouraged because all you see is development and concrete. Mm-hmm. And it just showed, like, it brought to light the fact that there's so much behind the scenes that you don't see necessarily in Florida. And there's a lot of wildlife still there and a lot of potential. So that made me very excited to learn about.
I love that. And he was strictly a photographer, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's amazing, too, because a lot of people in this field, I talk to a lot of people who want to go into this field or early career professionals, and they seem to think that like research is the only route you can make a difference. So there's somebody who took his passion of art and made it into their career and is making a difference conservation wise. That's fantastic.
I totally agree. And that's also a message that I'm really trying to get out, that take whatever you're passionate about and you can put a green lens on it. You can put a wildlife lens on it. Like, for example, I mentioned investing a moment ago because this was top of mind. Another podcast interview I had done was with this guy who went to school for, financial investing. And he ended up turning around and creating this company that focuses on investing only in non-carbon portfolios. So he's helping to reduce carbon footprints that way. But he had a background in financial investing. Like, that's not something you would think
right
would have anything to do with sustainability or conservation or biodiversity.
I love that. How did you get interested in all this stuff in the first place? Can you tell us about your career path to getting to the podcast?
Oh, I was always an animal lover. There's a picture of me at 3 years old, like sitting in a dog bed waiting for the dog to come play with me. Like, I remember always loving animals. I brought in my first stray when I was 5, I think. So it was something that was in me. And I don't know where that came from because my parents weren't necessarily animal people. Huh. They just they humored me basically with the pets that I wanted. And I thought I wanted to be a vet. Internships made me quickly realize that like the blood aspect of it wasn't going to work mm-hmm. for me. I went to school for environmental studies, and then I ended up working for the Wildlife Conservation Society for many years as a zookeeper, which I know can be very controversial at times, but at the same time, the Wildlife Conservation Society does things really well, and I was able to, my favorite part was enriching the animals and training them and stimulating them and giving them better well-being, mm-hmm. and quality of life. So that was wonderful. And then I thought I wanted to go.
What kind of zookeeper were you?
Actually, so I worked for the Prospect Park Zoo, which is a small zoo, and we mm-hmm. rotated. So I didn't have a particular area. Like some people are the elephant keepers mm-hmm. or the, you know, carnivore keepers. We rotated. So, which was even cooler because then I got experience with, you know, sea lions and Australia animals, baboons, birds. Yeah. All different kinds. So that was a really fun experience. And I thought I wanted to go into ecotourism. And I got this really cool fellowship with a company called Solimar International that does ecotourism all over the world. They contract with different companies. And I worked with National Geographic. I went to Bocas del Toro in Panama for what was only going to be 6 months. It was an ecotourism fellowship. I learned that wasn't really what I wanted to do, but from being there is where mm-hmm. I met my now husband. And I went back to Panama about a year later to be together, but I wouldn't go until I secured work. And I was able to secure work with the Smithsonian, and I was doing first some development work and then environmental education. Although I always kind of strung environmental education through everything I had done prior to, because when I was at the zoo, I really loved working with the environment, the education department to work with the kids and just teach them about wildlife. So there was always that undercurrent for me.
Well, what was it like working at the Smithsonian and in Panama?
Oh, it was amazing. I joke because my husband was a scientist with them, and I joke that my life was like the Big Bang Theory. I was surrounded by all of these like geniuses, and then there was me. And not to discredit myself, but yeah,
it was, I know what you mean. I often feel like I'm a combination of Penny and the characters in the Big Bang Theory, and especially yeah. because my boyfriend, he's really into like geeky stuff. So like I have to go to comic book shops now. I totally feel like Penny.
Yes. Oh my God, totally. So much so. But I loved it because I was surrounded by people who were experts in, you know, the wildest things, like how coral reefs used to look a million years ago and these specific species of crabs that were on the beaches right by the nature center. And just being able to have conversations with these individuals and get like firsthand accounts and like see how they did their science. It was so exciting. I really enjoyed it.
And for those of you who don't know, this is a famous field station. Isn't it one of the longest running in the world?
Yeah. So you're referring to Barro Colorado Island. It's said much better in Spanish. That sounded very English accent, but. That particular center was before the Smithsonian ever started. They set up their field station over 100 years ago when the Panama Canal was built.
Oh, okay.
Because they helped to figure out how to keep people from dying from all these mosquito-borne illnesses. Because I could go down another rabbit hole about mm-hmm. the Panama Canal. So anyway, that field station was established over 100 years ago, and then the Smithsonian. It was, I don't think it was officially Smithsonian at that time, but Smithsonian came soon after.
Okay. Is this the same field station then?
Yeah. So they have that, but they also have other locations now
okay.
as well, but they're all in Panama.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
The overall name is the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute.
Right. And yeah, and it's a very prestigious organization. It's a great place to work. There's tons of amazing science that comes out of it.
Yeah, very much so.
So more recently, you've become really active and vocal in talking about climate change. And you've been involved in education, as you mentioned, for a long time. And you've created some climate change curriculum. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I was starting to crave wanting to get back into the, you know, in front of kids, in front of students, and doing some more environmental education. The podcast I do consider as a form of education, but I wanted to do more programming. And I have so many different interests, but I really focused in on climate change because that's kind of our existential threat at the moment that threatens. I mean, wildlife is my passion, but climate change threatens wildlife and biodiversity and all the things.
It affects everything.
And I was hearing from so many people, like, what could I possibly do about climate change? And I'm very much someone who feels agency and efficacy, and is efficacy even the right word, but that people do have the power to make change. And so I started creating this program. I created this program called Action for Climate. And it focuses on the top actions that individuals can take to reduce their carbon footprint. So experts are agreeing on these top things that people can do. And then I've honed it in on what is most actionable for students. Like, for example, you know, insulating your attic is quite impactful, but a student's not going to insulate their attic. So I focused in on five of the action categories that they can take, and that's what the program is built around.
What's the top action category or action that somebody can take that's in, this is targeting high school, correct?
High school and universities.
And universities, what's the top action they can take?
So eating a more plant-based diet is one, and then reducing food waste is two. Like, those two have a huge impact, like a surprising impact on the amount of emissions, like personal emissions we can, our carbon footprint, let me put it that way.
Yeah,
it's surprising. And they're so easy and controllable. And like, I'm not, like, keep in mind, I said, eat a more plant-based diet, not, you know, become vegan. I mean, if you do become vegan, more power to you for sure. But if everyone reduced, I just recently posted an article from Nature that stated that if everyone reduced their meat consumption by 1/5,
I saw that you posted that on LinkedIn.
We can half deforestation.
And 1/5 isn't that much.
No, that's 1.5 meals or 1.5 days a week, just eating plant-based.
Yeah.
You know, could certainly do that.
I try to spread that message too, because I was a vegetarian since I was like 12. And then in my later years, I did go back to eating fish. And then I did a couple of diet changes. I was having health issues. So I did go back to eating meat temporarily. And then now I'm a vegan. But even now, I'm not 100% strict. Like, if I go to somebody's house and they have cheese or something, I'm not going to not eat it. But yeah, like, people get so protective about their diet and they automatically think you're trying to make them a vegan. Mm-hmm. And yes, yeah, so I really advocate, like you, to just reduce intake. I personally love eating vegan. It makes me feel so much better. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I look forward to talking more about on my blog. I've been wanting to post like vegan recipes and stuff, but just never have enough time. So hopefully that'll happen soon.
I remember seeing your recipe. I think it was from Thanksgiving. It looked so good. It was like a vegan mac and cheese. I forgot. I can't find that key ingredient here. I'm in Rome, Italy. I can't find it here. Because Italy is very much about cheese, like real cheese everywhere. So I can't find what you had suggested, and I forgot to do it when I was in the States, but I'll have to make that recipe one day.
And I just watched a documentary on Netflix. I think it's called You Are What You Eat.
And that was about a vegan diet. It was really good. And it really doubled down like, yes, I love eating vegan. I'm so excited about eating vegan. I came out of that like really excited.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. My husband did. And he is now the same. Like he's like, we're going plant-based 110%. But we did just watch on Netflix something about the Blue Zones, like living to 100. Mm-hmm. And also like everyone in the Blue Zones is very plant-based.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I haven't watched that one, but it's on my list. Okay, going back to your curriculum. So if you're a university professor or a teacher, then they can contact you. And what does this curriculum look like? Is it like a week program or does it fit into the standards? Teachers love to know about things like that.
Those are great questions. Yes, it is standards-based. So it is aligned with NGS standards and NGSS standards and SEL competencies. And also, depending on the state that your school is, I can find out which standards within your state. Like if there's anything more specific, I could tell you what standards it aligns to as well. And it is the way it's structured is that we do one category a week, and we have an intro week and an outro, a conclusion week. So it's almost a 2-month program.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really great. And I love working with teachers. I'll share it with teachers I know. They're mostly middle school teachers, but I'm sure they know teachers of older students as well.
Well, for the middle school, I'm now starting to offer as well lesson plans that align with my podcast episodes.
Oh, cool. So
there's lesson plans that are built. The Action for Climate program also has lesson plans, and it has podcasts relevant lesson plans as well. But for middle school, I could just offer the podcast lesson plans.
Oh, that's great. Do you design them yourself? Wow, that's amazing. And then another thing that you're involved with is, I believe you say it, EWCL, EWCL. Can you tell us about that organization and your role in it?
EWCL is amazing. So EWCL stands for the Emerging Wildlife Conservation Leaders. Excuse me. And it's a networking and leadership development organization. And every 2 years, you could apply to be in their next cohort. And during the 2 years of the program, you have different workshops where you learn different, relevant leadership skills relevant to the wildlife profession. You learn leadership skills, and then you work with a small group on a conservation project. So, for example, I believe the last cohort that ended last year, I think all of the groups focused on, oh my goodness, I might be confusing it. But anyway, pangolin work. So each of the small groups had different pangolin projects, and I was a part of EWCL 13 years ago, I think.
You were a student?
I was a student. And the people there, they feed your soul when you're with them, because they're your tribe. You know, if you're a wildlife professional and you get into the room with these people who are just so enthusiastic and they want you to succeed so badly. It's just such a wonderful, supportive place. I encourage all your listeners to check it out. I think the most recent cohort just wrapped up, but like follow EWCL and learn about what they're doing and apply for the next cohort, because it's so worth it.
And it's a scholarship. Is that how it works?
Yes. Yes. So it's a scholarship based. So you get everything covered. So they'll bring you to the workshops and you get to learn so much from them.
That's great. And then you mentioned before we started chatting that you have a freebie for my audience. Can you tell people about what's involved?
Absolutely. So on my website, forcesfornature.com, I offer a freebie. If you put in your email, you will get sent. I think it's a 2-pager on practical actions that you can take starting right now. So there are things, for example, like things that you can do from your couch. So there's ideas right there, or things that you can do, I think, when you travel. I don't remember the breakdown, but they're it's this like checklist of things that you can start doing right now that will help biodiversity and help the climate and help the environment in general.
I love that. And I'll put the link in the show notes. Okay, before we go, I just have one last question for you. What recommendations do you have for somebody who wants to make a change in a big way? So like for you, you started a podcast, and for lots of people, maybe there's some like fear behind that of putting yourselves out there. So what kind of advice would you have for somebody who wants to make a change, but they're feeling a little bit fearful?
Oh, I am, I'm an introvert, believe it or not. And I am fearful every single time I release a podcast episode and I post something on social media that has my face or a video of me or anything like that. It gets easier, but it's still not easy. But what I always think to myself is that this is not about me. This is a bit bigger than me. And the cause, conservation, protecting the world, sustainability, it all needs to happen. And if I'm not willing to put myself out there, who is?
I totally agree with that. I'm actually an introvert too. Even though I do like doing stuff like this and like being on video, I need my downtime to recharge. But yeah, when you tap into your bigger why, and that it's so important to get the message out there. But you have nothing to be afraid of. Your podcast is amazing. Your videos are amazing. So keep at it. The world needs people like you. And thank you once again for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that's it. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good night or day.
Thank you again, Crystal. That was such a great conversation. And I highly encourage all of you out there to check out Forces for Nature. If you want that freebie, and I know you do, head over to forcesfornature.com/fancyscientist. I will also put the link in the show notes. Finally, before we leave, I really want to encourage you to listen to the podcast episode I created about being optimistic, about being positive, because the way that we carry ourselves has such a ripple effect on society. And when we are more positive, when we are more optimistic, when we are excited to take care of our planet, other people will take notice and they will act similarly. So thank you so much again for listening. Remember to be kind to animals and to be kind to each other, and have an amazing day.
Are you an inspiring or entry-level wildlife biologist, ecologist, conservation biologist, or any other ologist wanting a career working with wildlife who's struggling, feeling stuck, lost, confused, or just plain worried about this career? Then you are going to want to make sure to do these three things. First, head over to fancyscientist.com and check out all of the resources I have for you. You'll find tons of informative blog posts and free tools. In my program section, you'll find masterclasses and self-paced programs, some of which are 100% free. And if you want to go even deeper with me and have the mentoring you always wanted, then check out my one-on-one and group mentoring programs. Second, while you're over there, you'll want to make sure to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll be the first to know about my latest blog post, podcast episodes, free trainings, and program offers. Sign up for my newsletter or opt in to any of my freebies and you'll be added to the list. Third, join our community at the Getting a Job in Wildlife Biology Facebook group. This is based on my book of the same name that has sold thousands of copies, helping aspiring wildlife biologists literally all over the world. In this group, my intention is to connect, support, and inspire future wildlife professionals. Come for daily affirmations to ensure your mind is primed for success, exclusive tips, myth busting, and more. If this episode helped you, please be sure to leave a review to help us reach even more people with this important message. You'll for sure receive extra positive vibes and love from me.